Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Thousands of hotel workers in Los Angeles on strike. UPS and the Teamsters closer to reaching a deal. Today on the show, we'll check in with the utility workers in New York and the Valley Labor Report. Welcome to the Thursday, July 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with James Shalito. James is the president of the utility workers, Local 1-2 in New York City. UWUA Local 1-2.org is their website. And he is going to talk about an agreement that came down just a week ago. Attentive Energy One, which is a joint venture between two power companies, announced a landmark agreement with the utility workers. Again, that's Local 1-2, which represents the workforce at the Ravenswood Generating Station. In connection with the 1,400 megawatt offshore wind proposal, which Attentive Energy submitted to the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority back in January, the company, get this, commits to supporting the just transition of the union workforce in the shift to renewable energy. This, my friends, is huge because there's a lot of folks in the fossil fuel industry that are saying, hey, you know what? We got good jobs right now. Okay, there's pollution. We're dealing with this climate change issue, but we like our jobs because of the good wages. And when it comes to renewables, the wages just, they're not the same. Well, this company, again, Attentive Energy, aims to set a national unmatched model for advancing clean energy projects, which includes a community-focused renewable repowering of Ravenswood, New York City's largest fossil fuel plant, to a clean energy hub. And the agreement outlines a plan for preparing the members of the local for the future in clean energy. So this could very well be a model for the rest of the country. James is quoted as saying, as a prospective hub for offshore wind operations, the union workforce at Ravenswood is poised to be the epicenter of the new green economy. By committing to a just transition, our members, who've been proudly running Ravenswood for decades, are ready to put their valuable expertise to work in operating new renewable energy infrastructure for New York. Pretty dramatic and pretty powerful. Again, that was James Shalito, president of Local 1-2, Utility Workers of America. So he'll be our first guest to talk about that. They also signed off on a new collective bargaining agreement with Con Edison. We'll touch on that as well. Later in the show, we're going to go to the state of Alabama and join Jacob Morrison. Jacob, no stranger to America's workforce. He and Adam Keller co-host the Valley Labor Report, which is heard in a number of markets down there. They've got a YouTube channel as well. And by the way, Jacob is a member of AFGE Local 1858. He serves as assistant vice president and secretary treasurer. A couple things we're going to get into. Aerojet Rocketdyne lost a union election with the machinists in Huntsville. And apparently they, the company, put on a vicious anti-union campaign. We'll talk about that. Now, why are they going union? Well, obviously for better wages and benefits. But according to one of the workers, among the many factors behind the decision to unionize was the fact that there were some major inconsistencies between what new hires were told by the company during the hiring process and what the realities were once they were fully part of the company. There's a comment here. They would tell you that the more you learn, the quicker you'll move up, and the quicker you'll move up the ladder, and the more compensation you'll get for that, which was not true. They also changed the management at the company. One worker is quoted as saying, "I've gone through 6 managers in 3 years. While this may not initially seem like a big deal," he explained, "it took a toll on the workers because every manager would have a different way of wanting to do things. So the workers are confused. They figure the union would bring them all together, but apparently they lost the election." So we'll talk about that. Also, get this story. A number of punk and heavy metal bands occupied a coffee shop. This was in downtown Birmingham, Alabama, to put on a benefit concert for its workers after the store abruptly closed without giving any notice to the employees or the community. No severance pay, nothing. TVLR.fm is a website for the Value of Labor Report. TVLR.fm. You might want to check that out. Now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. And you can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Thousands of hotel workers in the city of Los Angeles went on strike Sunday, seeking higher pay and better benefits. This would be a Unite Here Local 11, which is representing the workers. And they explained that workers have been pent up and frustrated and angry about what's happened during the pandemic, combined with the inability to pay their rent and stay in the city of Los Angeles. You know, the cost of living is pretty high there. Well, since April, the striking cooks, room attendants, dishwashers, servers, bellmen, front desk agents have been pushing for a new contract that guarantees them an immediate $5 hourly wage hike and a $3 boost annually for 3 years. Now, here's what's ahead. This year's agreements will govern through the 2026 World Cup and the 2028 Olympics, which will draw millions of tourists to the LA area. So they better get their act together on this one, because there's a lot of money at stake. Let's go down to Texas, where workers are dying as a result of heat-related deaths as temperatures soar to nearly 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, these tragedies come days after Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a state law invalidating Austin and Dallas mandates that employers offer breaks for construction workers and prohibiting localities from passing similar pro-worker legislation moving forward. Many Texans work inside without air conditioning. Others work outside. And without protections from the state, localities, or their employers, they have to rely on OSHA in order to stay alive. This is a subject we talked about with Len Aguilar, I want to say about a month ago. Len is the Secretary Treasurer of the Texas AFL-CIO. And at that time that we had the conversation, they were going through this in the legislature. And he was pretty sure that what happened in those two cities was going to be signed into law. And that's exactly what the governor of Texas, and all they were asking for is a 10-minute rest break. And they said, well, if we do it in one city, it's not going to be good. It's not uniform. So Len told us, well, okay, the Texas AFL-CIO will then do it for the entire state of Texas. No, they didn't want to go that route. So it's okay that the workers are dying, I guess. Here's the latest on UPS and the Teamsters. They're closer to reaching a deal that could improve conditions for the 340,000 employees. Although the Teamsters said the latest offer, well, they called it an insult. They got back yesterday, and they used yesterday, July 5th, as a deadline to reach some agreement, and they did not finalize it. But they made some progress. They reached a tentative agreement with the company on 3 major economic issues. And union leaders warned a strike is not off the table. No. The contract between UPS and the Teamsters will expire at midnight July 31st if an agreement is not reached between the two sides. Now, in June, the Teamsters passed a strike action vote with 97% approval. Now, here's where we are. In a tweet on Saturday, the Teamsters announced UPS had tentatively agreed to 3 major contract revisions that would improve workers' pay and schedules. The changes include ending forced overtime on drivers' days off, establishing Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a paid holiday, and This is pretty significant. Getting rid of the two-tier wage system that the union says is not fair to drivers who are flexible and not classified as full-time drivers. Sean O'Brien said in a tweet, gains made by the Teamsters at the national table with UPS cannot be overstated. To date, the Teamsters and UPS have already reached a tentative agreement on more than 55 non-economic issues, with the union winning everything it wanted. Now, under the new tentative agreement, flexible drivers who do not work traditional Monday through Friday shifts would be reclassified as regular package car drivers, placed in seniority, and have their pay adjusted, which in many cases will increase their wages. Prior to the agreement, flexible drivers were working equal hours, but were paid less due to the nature of their shift. The General Secretary Treasurer, Fred Zuckerman, he said, whether it's overtime, our members don't want to take holidays, they know they deserve or equal pay for equal work. If we stay united and commit to protect each other to the bitter end, there's no chance in hell we lose this fight. Since the start of the negotiations, which actually started in April, the Teamsters have made it clear they would not work a single minute past the expiration of the contract. In order to prevent a strike, UPS and the union must reach a tentative agreement in time for its union members to review the deal and vote to ratify the contract. So the clock is ticking on all of this. Again, they were trying to wrap this up yesterday, but the issues that came to the table, the Teamsters said, not good enough. And they claim UPS walked away when they said that. So both sides are blaming each other, and which is pretty typical in a situation like this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the utility workers in New York City.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. All right, let's go to the New York City area right now. And joining us on line number one is James Shalito. James is president of the utility workers. That would be Local 1-2. And they have about 7,400 members, primarily in New York City and Westchester, New York. That's a busy group there. And they've got some good news to report. Mentioned it a few minutes ago about a wind project and a transition from the fossil fuel industry to renewables, and the unions are going to be 100% involved. James Shalito, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. Yeah, I want to get into that that deal that just came down about a week and a half ago. But talk to me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been president? Why did you get involved with the utility workers? Let's start there. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello. Yes. So I've been president of Local 1-2 since 2019. I'm a utility worker for 45 years. I started in 1978 with Con Ed as a meter reader in the Bronx, and eventually I became a lineman for my last 15 years. I worked 13 years, actually, with, I'm not, excuse me, 30 years with Con Ed, the last 15 as a lineman, and I've been a union officer since 2008, and I got involved with the union because I just knew that it's the right thing to do. You know, if we're going to want to have a voice in what we do for our livelihood, you got to get involved with the union. And we're here to protect everybody's rights and make sure we get a fair shake for what we do each day.
And how's the union faring right now with those 7,400 members? Is that pretty pretty constant or what?
Yeah, actually, there was a dip a few years ago, but things are on the uptick. We're, our membership is rising right now. I'd say we've gained about 400 to 500 members over the past 2 years. And with the move to renewable energy in New York City, where eventually the city council has determined that all new buildings right now are going to be electric, it's going to put a huge demand on the load of the system, and to upgrade it and further maintain it, there's a bit of hiring going on now. So that's a positive thing.
So do you have a projection on how many workers you're going to need to fulfill that demand? Or is it too premature to figure that route right now?
Yeah, it's probably a combination of maybe a little too premature, and maybe I just always want more. Okay, I feel the more of a unionized workforce we have maintaining the New York City and Westchester energy sources, the better off we all are. It's going to be, as most people know, New York is a huge amount of power. Of, and it's not just electric, it's gas, which eventually I imagine is going to go away. It's going to take quite a while. But there's steam energy also used in New York City. And my members are the ones that keep that running. They keep New York City lit.
Yeah. Well, what is it? Manhattan alone, I don't even know if this is accurate, but I remember it was like 8 million people just in the Manhattan area. You throw in all the boroughs, and you're probably up to 11, 12. I can't even imagine how much power is consumed on a daily basis there. But the good news is you're in the industry that's going to supply that power. You're working with the power. And how many power companies are you actually working with, Jim?
We currently, I think we have 6 power producers that we represent the workers at. And as you started off with the transition to renewable energy is going to take a while, and some companies are more advanced in addressing it or adopting it than others. And I'm here to help get them in line with it. The future. New York State law now is by 2040 that all power production must be fossil fuel free. And so it's not that far off. 17 years, is not that long in regards to changing how something that's been done for well over 100 years is going to now.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in legislatures and even the car companies. They're pushing. I think GM is saying we want to be, all electric or 70 or 80% electric by 2035. But they're throwing these dates out there now, so we got to work toward those dates. So that being said, let's talk about this Attentive Energy One, which is a joint venture between two companies, Total Energies and Rise Light and Power. And apparently, this agreement, a landmark agreement, just came down with your union. So let's get into this. When did this start? And I'm sure there were some complications that arose to accomplish what you were trying to work toward, which is the transition of your union workforce to renewables. So let's start right there. Go ahead, Jim.
All right. So as I mentioned, a few years back, New York State adopted a law, the CLCPA, that it's going to require all power production to be 70% fossil fuel free by 2030 and 100% by 2040. So Rise Power and Light, who owns the Ravenswood Power Generating Station, which has been in operation for about 65 years and supplies about 20% of New York City's electric, they made the decision that they were going to go all in on becoming a renewable energy source at the plant. So that prompted, of course, discussions on what do we do with the workforce that's currently there that works on fossil fuel production, and now it's going to become offshore wind. Now, they had a couple of different projects that they had planned. They fell through. Not that they weren't good, it just they just didn't work out in the end. And rather than just, you know, pack up their bag and say, you know, well, we'll run this out to the end, they just switched, and now it's to the one that they've deemed with a ton of energy, and it's going to be an offshore wind farm that's going to bring the power directly into the plant. And we have an agreement that all of the workers at the plant will be transitioned. There will be training for everyone to now keep their jobs and be involved in the new way of power production.
And they're going to keep the same wages and benefits and everything, right?
Yes, that is the full intention. And come this October, I have a contract with them to renew, and we're going to firm that up even more, put stronger language on the move to renewable and the workforce. We have a MOU that we've already signed with them, and it's groundbreaking. It's the only plant in the country, I think, that is doing this. And what's important is that they recognize the value of a trained union workforce.
Right. Jim, let me ask you this. In the course of the negotiations with Ravenswood, what were the workers saying about this? Because I'm sure there was a certain amount of fear of what was going to happen here in this transition. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So there was an amount of fear with my membership as to, are they going to be able to keep their jobs? You know, the Ravenswood power plant, when you see news reports often about, hey, we got to get rid of these 30 peaker plants or 30 fossil fuel plants, they use the picture of the stacks at Ravenswood because they're right on the East River, directly across from the UN. So it's a very, you know, it's a great picture with the backdrop of New York City. And, you know, that's their home. That's where they've been working. And it's been a fear of, hey, are we going to be able to keep our jobs? Even though they promised that they're going to make us renewable, will we all be able to stay? And that's been one of the primary focuses. And I truly believe that not only are we going to keep everybody currently working, there's also a good possibility that we may add to that workforce.
Yeah, especially with the mandate coming from the legislature on renewables. I get that. As far as the history with these companies, I mean, pretty good history when it comes to, you know, collective bargaining and things like that. I mean, do you trust them? I guess that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I guess it's that trust with a little bit of a check in place. We have had some very good discussions. We've gotten, somewhat of a good working friendship with the owners and the people that run the plant. They do seem genuine. This plant originally was owned by Con Ed, and then when deregulation came in, they sold it off. And it's been, prior to Rise owning the plant, it had two other owners. And every time they would make a promise to certain things, particularly training, they never followed through. With Rise, since they've been involved with us, every promise or everything we've negotiated, they have held up their end and have been true to their word. So I have no reason to believe that they're not going to be going forward.
Definitely good to hear. James Shalito, Joining us on our live line today, he is president of the Utility Workers Local 1-2. Website is UWUALocal1-2.org. We'll continue with him later in the show. We're going to go down to Alabama and join Jacob Morrison, co-host of the Valley Labor Report. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. ULAgency.org is a website you want to check out. Let's go back to the New York City area. James Shalito joining us as our featured guest today. He's president of the Utility Workers, Local 1-2, 7,400 members strong, primarily New York City, Westchester, New York. We're talking about the transition from fossil fuels to renewables, and there's a landmark agreement. I want to touch on that a little bit more, but, you know, I have a question for you, because I was reading about the history of the utility workers, and it's an interesting history, especially when it comes up with the electrical workers. And there was a time, well, there was some conflicts in years past. Apparently, a lot of those have been ironed out, but you mentioned that you were a lineman when you started out. And I'm thinking, well, there's IBEW linemen as well. Can you explain the difference for our members, Jim? Because I think that's important to point out. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I was a lineman. I worked with Con Ed. So Con Ed is the utility that operates and maintains the electric, gas, and steam grid in the New York City and Westchester area. So there's an in-house workforce that maintains the lines, underground overhead. So as far as the linemen, the primary job of the linemen that work for the utility is to construct and maintain and repair. Whereas the IBEW linemen primarily are construction. They work for different contractors. They may at times do some work for our utilities or the various different utilities. But on a daily basis, the IBEW would be primarily just constructing things, whereas my members would, in addition to constructing, operate and maintain and repair the line.
I see. Okay. And everything is going pretty well because of that construct that you forged out?
Well, yeah, for the most part, yes. Of course, there's always that, you know, bit of, you know, you don't want nobody to take your work. So at times, certain projects, the utility will decide that it's in their eyes more prudent to hire a temporary contractor to come in and construct, say, you know, put in 50 poles and all the assorted things in between. And our job is to push and say, no, I want my in-house workforce to do that. But there is just, you know, we have, I think, about 250 folks in our overhead division. So, you know, that number of people, you can only do so many jobs. And the overflow goes to the contractors. And as much as IBEW and the utility workers may be rivals, we do want them to get to work if it's not us, because we do not want it to be a non-union workshop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hear you, brother. All right, let's get back to this landmark agreement. And one thing I want to get into in this segment is the training that's going to go into all of this. And apparently, not only are they working, and again, we're talking about Attentive Energy One, which is a joint venture between Total Energies and Rise Light and Power, where they've agreed with the utility workers, 1-2, representing the workforce at Ravenswood Generating Station. And they're going to support the transition of the union workforce to renewable energy. And this is pretty significant, and I'm sure others are looking at what's happening here, because not just in New York, but there's other areas of the country that are really trying to advance renewable energy, whether it's solar, whether it's wind. Now, talk to me about the training center, and I see the IBEW is part of this as well. Apparently, Attentive Energy One is proposing a new IBEW training center, and you're going to have a training center as well as a result of this agreement. Can you get into some specifics on that?
Yes. So the training as we're going forward here, we have a workforce that currently works in fossil fuels and needs to transition to this new type of work. So, you know, we can't have the thought that, you know, the worker on Friday afternoon is going to be done in the fossil fuel plant. Somebody flips the switch and Monday morning, they go now work on the new stuff. And it can happen that way. So Rise Power and Light at Ravenswood Center, since they've been owners, have been true to their word in training. Training is always very important. The way to have a safe and reliable workforce is by training. And previous owners of that plant never followed through on the promises of training, whereas Rise has. And that has taken it to another degree. We're partnering with Rise and our national union's Power for America training program. And we put in for a grant through NYSERDA, which is the New York State organization that is spearheading the whole move to renewables. So they have training grant money available, and we've applied for it. And we're going to use that money to retrain the workers at the plant as well as future workers. And the amount of workers that are going to be need to be trained or retrained in this industry is huge. And that's why there's room for not only my group to be doing that, but overflow that would go to the IBEW. Now, I'd be lying to you if I said I'd rather get all that work and build a bigger center of my people. But I guess maybe that's just, you know, me wanting to do it all. So they've agreed to allow the IBEW to get involved in training. I believe they already have a training center. This would probably maybe lead to some expansion of their facility. I'm really not in deep knowledge of what their plan is, whether they're building a new facility or refurbishing or retrofitting their current one. But I know with us, we're going to retrofit the current one and expand it as well.
Jim, I was reading a quote in one of the news releases on this earlier in the show, and you said that Ravenswood is poised to be the epicenter of the new green economy. I mean, those are powerful words right there. I'm just wondering, because of what was reached here like a week and a half ago, are you getting calls from other states, other municipalities saying, hey, what did you guys do over there in New York? We want to go in this direction as well, because this is pretty significant. Has any of that happened yet?
Well, not yet, but maybe after being on your show, it's going to start to happen, because it'll get out there further. But it is going to be the epicenter. It is, if you think of it, Ravenswood is able to provide right now 20% of New York City's energy needs, and that may expand further with this new move. And it's poised right now. The most important part of going to renewable energy is how do you bring it in to the grid? And the power stations that currently operate are where the connections are to the grid. So it only makes sense to bring it in to that spot. You know, a lot of other offshore wind projects are going to come on land in the various communities, and the communities are worried about it, and there's all kinds of opposition and whatnot. This project stands completely different, where it's going to come in from offshore up the East River directly into a plant that already operates and is connected to the grid. So there isn't going to be any disruption of anybody in their community or their properties. It's directly into that plant, and that plant is, as I said, sits directly on the connections to the New York City grid. And where it currently is, it just is perfect positioning. And other companies in this industry are not as forward-thinking. Actually, one of the companies I negotiate with don't think it's ever going to happen, and they have no plans to change, and they feel they're going to be the last man standing and make a ton of money. I think that's insanity, but that's the way some of these companies are going about it. They don't see the value in it, and they're very short-sighted, and they don't care about the current worker. They just worry about their bottom line right now.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of companies in that camp, no doubt about that. Well, I congratulate you for hanging in there and coming up with this agreement for your members. Again, 7,400 members at Utility Local 1-2. And one more question here. Any collective bargaining agreements? I know you represent a number of power companies. Where do we stand with that right now? And I'm sure you don't get much rest during those periods, do you?
No, the amount of rest is on the short end. Yes, it gets pretty intense. And so with RISE, at Ravens, we have a collective bargaining agreement that's going to be renegotiated come this October. We actually just started getting together to put together dates to begin talks. This time next year, our largest employer, Con Edison, we will be in contract talks with them. Just finished one in January with the New York Power Authority. So yeah, we're always on the move towards contract talks with the various companies that we represent the members. But this topic that we're talking about here, Ravenswood, is significant because it's maybe only 100 of my 7,400 members, but the move to renewable energy affects all of my members because it's a ripple effect. It's not just the power goes out, but then once it's out there on the lines, we need more people to maintain it. And with the move to renewable energy, it's going to cause a much larger load on the grid, which is going to require a larger workforce and a more trained workforce to maintain it. Yeah. And my concern is about each and every one of my workers, and there's various levels that I have to worry about the transition. You know, the 35-year-old with two kids and a mortgage, you know, he's got a long part of his career ahead of him. We have to transition that worker. We also have to transition the worker that's 50, 55 years old to actually the next stage of their lives, which is retirement, because to retrain that 55-year-old in this new industry or type of work, although it may be similar, there are significant differences, it's not fair to that worker or the company they work for that they're going to spend money to retrain or the time to retrain, and then 3 or 4 or 5 years later they're going to retire. So there is different levels of the transition that need to be worked out in this move to renewables. And the worker is the key. It's not the profits, it's the workers. Because without the workers, we're not going to get there. And we do want to keep all lights on, and all our electronics that we have these days need to be charged.
Amen, brother. Well said. James Shalito, president of Utility Workers Local 1-2.org out of New York City, Westchester, New York. You take care. Hope you make it to your destination safely. You take care. We'll be in touch, I promise, okay?
All right. Thank you. Be well.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Jacob Morrison and the Valley Labor Report. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to the state of Alabama right now and join Jacob Morrison, no stranger to America's workforce. He and Adam Keller are hosts of the Valley Labor Report. Do check out this website, TVLR.FM. Jacob's background, of course, 100% union. He is with AFGE Local 1858, serving as Assistant Vice President and Secretary Treasurer. And here to talk about a union campaign. Well, it didn't go so well. We're talking about Aerojet Rocketdyne in Huntsville, Alabama. Jacob, welcome back to America's Workforce. What happened in this situation? Go ahead.
Yeah, Flash. Thanks for having me on. It's always good to be talking with you. And so this the campaign to unionize Aerojet Rocketdyne has actually been going on for two or three years now. Workers at Aerojet got in touch with the Machinists Union. I think that's also not a stranger to your audience, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And they have they've had a committee inside of the shop for years. And so they've been working with the Machinists Union to have an election and to unionize the facility, obviously, with the goal of getting a good union contract. And the first time, just, you know, for some historical context, I guess, they filed a petition. And then once they were able to get the information of everybody in the workforce, they, you know, they did some polling and they saw that it was going towards a loss. So they ended up pulling the petition and then refiled about a year later, thinking that they had more support. Unfortunately, in that year, the unit had grown, so they didn't have really an accurate count before they filed. But instead of pulling the petition, the people inside Aerojet, even though they were kind of getting some signs after they filed that potentially it was going to end in a loss. The people in inside Aerojet really wanted to go forward with the election, something that one of the staff organizers for the Machinist Union told me was that, you know, the committee just said, you know, just give us a chance, right? So they went forward with the election, and it did end in a loss. It was pretty overwhelming against the union, which is really unfortunate. And I had been talking to some of the workers that I had made connections with over the campaign, and some of the staff organizers about, you know, why they think that happened. And I think the big consensus is that, you know, the internal committee wasn't strong enough. It wasn't big enough and representative enough. And they weren't able to make connections with enough of their fellow workers. And then, of course, you know, like we know, the anti-union campaign put on by management was very convincing. In particular, management convinced the employees that they would not get a union contract for 2 or 3 years if they voted to unionize. And in that period, Aerojet asserted that it would be illegal for them to give any raises or bonuses, even if they were previously scheduled or expected during those times of year, because of the union, which we know is not true.
Right.
But, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have experience with unions, you may believe these, you know, fancy sounding lawyers that they bring in to tell you all this stuff. And we recognize that as a tactic from Starbucks too, right? That's something that they've been telling union Starbucks workers, that no, we can't give you a raise until you get a contract. That's not true. What they're doing is really, you know, perverting the mandate by the NLRA to maintain status quo during a union election. But status quo does not mean nothing at all changes, right? Status quo means that, you know, nothing changes except what would be expected to. So status quo would be if every year roundabout you get a raise, then status quo is you getting a raise again, right? But that's not what Aerojet was saying. So these people, you know, faced with the prospects in their mind of 2 or 3 years without a raise, a lot of them voted no.
You know, I'm a little bit concerned about this company. Again, they are a world-class developer and manufacturer mm-hmm. of advanced propulsion and energetic systems. And they've got customers at the DOD, Department of Defense, NASA, number of agencies. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're a high-profile player. But I have to question, I was reading in one of your columns here that management, one of the workers is complaining that he went through 6 managers in 3 years. What the heck's going on in this company? I mean, they can't figure out, because every manager has a different style. So the workers are mm-hmm. upset. And on top of that, I guess some of the workers are saying, well, you know, if you go up the ladder, you're going to make more money. And that's not happening. So mm-hmm. they're basically lying to their workers, right?
Yeah, it seems that way to me, and you're exactly right about the 6 managers in 3 years. That was really a primary complaint from the people that I talked to that were interested in unionizing, was the instability inside of this facility, the instability in terms of different managers, different management styles, not knowing who they didn't need to, you know, make angry and what makes people angry, but also the pay. You know, that's a very big thing, right, for especially for people that, you know, don't have a lot of money, like bosses. Having regular raises is important, and that's not something that that they've always been able to expect. And the amount of the raises are really variable. When they get the raises are really variable. And then what level you come in on. You know, in the federal government, we have what's called the general schedule, and so there's this wage matrix and all that. And so you kind of look at your experience and all this and how and your performance, and you can more or less kind of place, okay, I should be making about this much, and then you can talk to all of your coworkers and say, this is about how much they don't have. They have a sort of wage matrix, but it's not abided to at all. There was one fellow that I talked to. He said that he's had years in quality control, in machining, and this fella came in off the street from a car wash at a higher level than he did. And so, you know, so he said, what's up with that? and you know, I mean, look, I'm a union guy, and I'm not gonna, fault anybody for making more money. You know, I'm happy for the guy from the car wash, but I think that, you know, that doesn't mean the guy from the car wash should make less money necessarily. It just means that the people who have the experience, they should be rewarded for that. And that's just not something that workers inside Aerojet Rocketdyne, at least in Huntsville, have been able to expect.
Crazy situation. Well, I want to give a shout out here to a Philip French that you quoted in your blog here. He's the district organizer for the Machinist Union. I'm going to share this story too with Tommy Buffenbarger. Tommy is still with us as an independent labor voice, and he was general president of the Machinist Union for a very, very long time. He has since retired. In fact, if you get an opportunity, I did a really good show with him a couple of days ago for July 4th on the history of Harley Davidson and the Machinist Union. It's a really great story. It's one of those happy stories of labor and management working together. Do check that out. In the meantime, Jacob, let's talk about what's going on in downtown Birmingham. I was reading earlier about what some punk and heavy metal bands occupying a coffee shop. What's going on there?
Yeah, that is a really heartwarming story, I think, after some just really gross behavior by the company. And so we can start with that, which is that about a week ago now, the coffee company Revelator Coffee, which had a very popular store in downtown Birmingham, they just closed without any notice. To the community, which would be nice, but more importantly, I think, to their workers. You know, people just showed up to their shift and saw that, oh, nobody's here, and I can't get in anymore. So the thing is closed. And that is, so with no notice, you know, these people, their lives are totally upended. They don't have any severance. Everything is immediately cut off. And so there's just no time for them to reorient their lives around not having this job anymore. So it's a huge imposition by management on these employers. Which is something that I noted when I quote tweeted some of the baristas on Twitter, showing people that it was closed. You know, that this is something that unionization can actually help with, because unionization isn't going to necessarily stop an employer from going from closing. You know, I mean, management can still make stupid decisions and make unwise financial decisions, and that's something that management does all the time, right? And a lot of times we're subject to the cost of that. But on our union contracts, we do have layoff procedures. We do have procedures for what happens when it's necessary to close an operation or something like this. We have procedures for severance pay, for continuing health insurance, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, and there were people who were just not aware of that on Twitter who asserted that I was wrong, you know, who said, oh, there's no way that, you know, having a union can stop a store from closing. And what I was saying is not that having a union could stop the store from closing, but that it could better prepare the workers in the meantime while they're looking for other employment. And that's why, in fact, there are so many workers in the service industry now trying to unionize so that they can get some of that stability. So that's just really gross behavior from management. But what the community did after that was really heartwarming. One of the friends of the workers at Revelator Coffee is in a metal band. And so the person who worked there, she still had a key apparently to the place. And so they opened it up and they set up all of their equipment and everything. And they had a metal concert inside of Revelator and to benefit the workers. You know, they had donations and stuff like that that was split between the workers. And so you can find it on Twitter. You can find some of the set. I think you can actually find the whole set on YouTube. So that's a really cool example of the community coming around and supporting workers when, you know, their management doesn't.
That's great. It's often been said, it's not the news, it's how you react to the news. And that was an interesting reaction, no doubt about that. Jacob Morrison, co-host of the Valley Labor Report. Do check out his website, tvlr.fm, tvlr. WBR.FM. You take care. Say hi to Adam for me, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road. Okay, brother?
Will do. Thanks, Flash.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Dorsey Hager, the Central Ohio Building Trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred Redman of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.